Well, you know, on the surface, when we look at matters of faith and religion, we're not telling the whole story. And many of us who have decided that our spirituality needs to have a depth to it have discovered that to be true. And when it comes to science as well, you know, the earliest understanding of science was could only take it to a certain level of depth. And that wasn't telling the whole story either. But as you go deeper into faith, into religion, and into science, there is a whole bigger story, a whole much more amazing, strange, powerful, inspiring story. And exploring both of those fields is the has been the background of our guest speaker today, who did a lot with his brain. He has considerable intellect. He gained honors degrees in physics and experimental psychology at Cambridge, University of Cambridge in England, and a postgraduate degree in computer science. Studied meditation then in Eastern philosophy in India, and then did research with neurophysiology of meditation at the University of Bristol. He's been a consultant also in the business world with IBM, Apple, and other corporations. And he's written a number of books. The previous books have been the TM Technique, the Brain Book, the Upanishads, the Global Brain Awakens, and Waking Up in Time. Also created two award-winning videos, The Global Brain and The White Hole in Time. The current book is From Science to God is one that really caught my attention, even though I had seen the videos before and had the privilege of experiencing Peter when I was in seminary in Unity back a number of years ago. He has a wonderful ability to be able to take what is obviously complex subjects and bring them into a vocabulary that we can all understand and also be deeply inspiring as well. So we're so delighted and so honored to have you with us today. And please give a warm welcome to Peter Russell. Peter, come on up.
So we gave the title for this morning, the title for this morning's presentation talk is From Science to God, the title of the book. And that title is partly my own journey as a scientist who had no interest whatsoever in spirituality, who never dreamt I'd ever be standing up on a Sunday morning in church talking. But also how I believe science is actually pointing towards now what all the great spiritual teachings have been saying for centuries, for millennia. But there's been this big rift in worldview, and there's been this sort of war on that science has completely excluded religion, and religion feels, oh, science doesn't get it, it's just caught in its own little materialistic dogma. And so you've got two sides just accusing each other of being dogmatic. And what I see, and this is what I will be focusing more on this afternoon, is how science, as it begins to understand the nature of consciousness, is actually, or will be beginning to understand what spirituality has been on about all this time. But it doesn't realize yet, science is sort of not realizing that where it's going is actually opening up the door to understanding spirituality. And seeing, you know, what it means to say, you know, the essence of the cosmos is divine, is spirit, or whatever. It still thinks it's matter. But as we probe more and more into the nature of matter, we're coming to come closer and closer to understanding that actually there's not so much matter there, there's just being, spirit, consciousness. And this morning, I actually want to focus more on sort of the personal side of that. Because, you know, the divine has two sides. It's that, you know, the cosmic essence of everything, and it's our own essence. And that's where the spiritual practice is in coming in touch with what is true for ourselves, our own innermost essence. And as Larry was pointing out in that meditation, you know, that is that unconditional peace, the unconditional love that's always there, but which is so often covered up by all the things that our minds get into, all the stories we tell ourselves, that actually keep us apart from what is already there. And so I see the spiritual path. I love that quote from A Course in Miracles, a journey without distance to a home we've never left. Yeah. So often we think we've got to get somewhere, that the spiritual journey is getting somewhere different, some wonderful, exotic, blissful, internal Shangri-La or something, or even external. But it's not. It's actually, I see it more and more as just a letting go of all the things that have actually or are keeping us apart from our true nature. And letting go is one of those universal themes of all spiritual traditions, whether it's letting go, surrender, forgiveness. In fact, the Greek word for forgiveness in the Bible is aphesis, which actually means to physically release the grip, to physically let go. And when we're forgiving, we're actually releasing the grip our minds have on a certain attitude or judgment or belief system. We're just relaxing the mind. And I think that, to me, is almost the essence, is letting the mind relax. We get, you know, I think a lot of us may know how to let the bodies relax. We do yoga or stretching or other things. We know how to let the bodies relax or exercise. But letting the mind relax is actually a lot harder, because we so easily get caught in this particular way of thinking. And once we get caught in something, it's almost like we're in a dream. It's not like we're in a dream, we are in a dream. Many, many teachers have said, you know, we are, the unawakened state is living in a dream, or it's a dream world. We are dreaming the world. I think that is true, not so much in the sense we are dreaming this world out there, though there are senses in which that is true. But as soon as we get caught up in some story about what we would like, what we wouldn't like, where we're going, what happened yesterday, is this okay? Am I okay? You know, we all have hundreds of these stories we get caught up in. And they're all stories about how can I actually be better? How can I feel better? How can I be more at peace? How can I not suffer so much? That's the background to almost everything we think. The underlying reason is like we want to improve the quality of life. The Dalai Lama said, in the final analysis, the hope of every person is simply peace of mind. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for peace of mind, inner peace, ease, contentment. We can give it many, many different words. And then we're looking for it out there. And that, to me, is the fundamental mistake that all the great spiritual teachers have come upon and pointed out in one way or another. And that was the realization for me that shifted me out of just being a pure, hard, atheistic scientist. I'd spent 10 years doing that and completely, as I say, rejected religion. In fact, I rejected it when I was about 13, when I went through, I was, you know, in England, part of the Church of England, the Protestant Church, and you went through the process of, you know, 13, you went through the process of confirmation. Everybody did, without thinking. It was what you did. And I realized then that the Nicene Creed was something, well, I was meant to believe. It was a creed. It was a belief system. I thought up until then it was just something people chanted in church. You know, I believe in one God, the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, and his only begotten Son, born of a virgin, and all that stuff. I just thought it was a chant. Then I realized, no, I was meant to sign off on this. If I was to become, you know, a fully confirmed member of the church, I had to sort of put a tick on my signature, I believe, on pain of perjury, that I believe this stuff. And it's like, what? You know, come on. Are you serious? And that's when I completely ditched religion. Up until 13, I sort of, you know, I just thought, no way. And it was 10 years later, after I got interested in meditation for other reasons, because I was interested in the brain and the mind and how we could relax the mind and the potentials of the mind, that I ended up going to India to study meditation. I was with the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, in his ashram studying meditation. And that's when I realized, hang on, there was something to religion. Well, there was something to spirituality. For me, there's a big difference between spirituality and religion. Religion, I would define as the fossils of spirituality. And I began to see there was a common theme in all the spiritual traditions. And they varied enormously in terms of their belief systems. You know, you have Hindu systems where you have many gods, then you have the monotheistic traditions, even Christianity, Judaism, Islam, and then you have religions with no gods, like Buddhism and Taoism. And even with all these complete variety of sort of thought systems, I could see beneath them all was a common thread, a common teaching, and that's what I became fascinated by, was what is that common thread that has sparked all these great traditions over time. And I think what has happened is when individuals have woken up and realized that we get ourselves stuck in our, you could call it our ego mind, some talk about it as the ego, a self-centeredness. Some traditions talk about it as materialism, worshipping false idols. Buddhism talks about it as samsara, which means that endless wandering on in life, wandering on, looking out there for something that's going to make us feel okay inside. And other traditions talk about, you know, as the dream, whatever. They're all talking about this same thing, the way we get ourselves caught. And I think what happens is they're so inspired, joyful to have discovered this, like this release. It's like when you stop doing this, when you stop creating all these dreams and stories and distractions and just let the mind relax, it's like, ah, life is good. And it's more than good. It's like, this is wonderful. This is the way we should, you know, how could I have been living in this sort of constrained, trapped way for all these years? It's like this huge release, relief, and people want to share it. They want to teach it. And they become teachers, and they share it with other people, but those people not being quite as awake or enlightened as the teacher get maybe 80% of it, and the teacher passes on and they share their 80% with others who get their 80% of the 80%, and they share it with others and they add in the bits they already know from the culture and give it about 200 years and it's become something completely different. It's become a religion. And then just it gets absorbed by the culture. And I think the turning moment for me when I was in India was realizing that the whole thing gets turned inside out. It's like the materialistic mindset, which spirituality is trying to dissolve, takes over and turns the spiritual teaching into something material, not in the sense of a thing, but it's something to be chased, to be done, to rituals, all of that. It becomes something to be followed, as opposed to this natural thing of just this release, this letting go. And that's really been my journey since then, has been exploring what is this common thread here, you know, unity. What is the unity of all these traditions? And to present that in ways which are reasonable in the current time. So I think we live in an age of reason. And it's reason which will actually convince people in this world. Today, if you go out and do a miracle, people don't take it too seriously. They bring in a magician like Randy to show that, oh, I can do the same thing by sleight of hand, therefore the miracle didn't happen. We dismiss it. We don't believe in miracles now. But we do believe in reason. And so almost my joy has been taking the essence of these great spiritual teachings and saying, how can we put them into ordinary, everyday language without any spiritual claptrap language, etc.? Because if there's a truth there, it really can be brought down to everyday language. And Larry mentioned I worked in corporations. What I was doing there was, I did this about 15 years, was taking what I was finding exciting on sort of the cutting edge of this global spiritual awakening that's happening and putting it into the language and metaphors and exercises that are appropriate to people working in a corporation whose main concerns are meeting targets and keeping their kids in school, whatever, just ordinary everyday people who would run a mile at any slightly spiritual word. And I love that, just taking it into ordinary everyday language. And just getting people to see how we actually keep our minds trapped in this way. I mean, a very simple example I often used to use with people was, what happens when you're stuck in a traffic jam? I used to ask people, you know, how many people get stressed by being in a traffic jam? And I could guarantee that almost everybody would put their hand. I mean, how many people here get stressed by being in a traffic jam? Yeah, okay. That's not true. Well, a traffic jam doesn't stress you. People think the traffic jam is making me stressed. What's happening is you're there, you're stuck, you're going to be late, and the voice in the head, the story, starts, I'm going to be late, and if I'm late, I'm going to miss the appointment, or I'm not going to be home on time, I'm going to miss something, someone's going to be upset at me. The story starts, and you start going into a little imagined dream. A little daytime dream happens. You start imagining what's going to happen when you arrive late or you don't get there on time or whatever. And in this imagined dream, there's emotional reactions. You start feeling tense, whatever it is. You start feeling upset. You start feeling stressed. It's all coming from the dream that's going on in your head. The traffic jam isn't doing that. In fact, the traffic jam is the exact opposite. It's the most relaxed part of driving you could ever be in. You haven't got to move anything, feet or arms. You haven't got to look around you. You can close your eyes. For once, the only time driving, you can close your eyes. Sit back, relax, nothing to do. It's sort of the perfect situation you've been waiting for all day long. There's nobody interrupting you, no. And you're stressed. It's the most relaxed part of driving, but it's because you're caught in a story, in a dream. Somebody else could be sitting in the same situation saying, this is wonderful. This is just the sort of situation I've been hoping for. So the point is, two completely different reactions from the same situation. And the difference is what goes on in here. And I think this is the essence of waking up, is waking up from these stories, these dreams we keep telling ourselves, waking up to what is actually real in the moment. And what is real in the moment is always our experience of the present moment, but also our own personal sense of presence, the sense of being that's always there. I mean, even right now, it's probably happening. You know, as you're listening to me, I'm saying things, and there's probably little stories being triggered. You know, might be about what I'm saying, or something else completely different that's come into your mind that you need to attend to later or happened earlier. And as soon as those things happen, we start distracting ourselves. I sometimes call human beings the self-distracting animal. We are self-distracting the whole time, and we get caught up in these stories and just... And then recognize it, just recognize, ah, there I go, this little story, this little dream. And it's not so much saying I mustn't do this, but just noticing it. Ah, there I go again, and then just coming back and here I am. Here I am in my body, here in this situation, and this is what's happening. And below all that stuff in terms of the physical and the sounds, beneath all of that is here I am as well. Here I am, my sense of being, that sense of presence which has been there all our life. I mean, we all know this sense of I-ness that is nothing to do with our role in life, our personality, things we do, who we are, all that stuff changes. But beneath all that, there's this sense of I-ness, this sense of personal presence that never changes. You know, the sense of I-ness that you have now is exactly the same sense of I-ness you had when you were 10 years old or 5 years old, if you can remember it. That hasn't changed. It's I. But that, you can't define it, but we all know it, we all feel it, and it's always there. And this, to me, again, is part of the universal teaching of all the traditions, is just recognizing that. That question, what is the self? Who am I? Just recognizing behind all of the things we get caught up in, there's always this sense of me, presence. So the practice for me is just whenever I get caught in a story, which happens hundreds of times a day, most of which I don't notice, but when I do notice, just pausing, say, okay, and just coming back to here, now, to what is going on, and then just noticing behind that, there's this sense of presence, the I-ness that's always there. And that, I think, for me, that is the divine. That, for me, is what God is. And I think many people, when they touch into that, often it happens completely by surprise and they're blown away. Because here is something that, you know, it has that peace. There is that stillness. It's that peace which passeth all understanding. It doesn't change. It is eternal. It's unconditional. It doesn't depend upon anything. It's always there. And it has that quality of compassion, love. Muktananda said one of my favorite lines. He said, love is the secret sensation of the self. Love is the secret sensation of the self. And to me, each of those three words are really important. It's secret. We don't normally notice it. It's hidden. And it's a sensation. Love is a quality. It's a feeling. We all know that feeling in the heart, that feeling of love. And that is the feeling of the self. That's how the self feels. It has that quality of love. And so when we drop into that state, what we feel is we just feel in love, not in love with anything or anybody particularly, but just our being is in love. There's just this quality of love that's just there pervading our experience. And so when you start dropping into this natural thing, oh, I've been touched by God. I see it the other way around. We are touching the divine that's always there in us, but is so easily overlooked because it's still and quiet. And because we're looking out there, we're so busy looking out there for what's going to make us feel okay. And all that looking and all the searching and all the wanting and all the planning and all the regretting, all this stuff that keeps us occupied, we totally miss what we're looking for. We totally miss that it's right there. If we could just stop, relax, we'd actually find what we're looking for. There's a sort of sentence you sometimes see posted outside more fundamental churches than this. Sinners repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. You know, which the sort of meaning that's intended is those of you who've done wrong, you know, get down on your knees and say you're sorry because it's coming and the day of judgment is coming and, you know, you don't want to be burnt in hell, so repent now. The actual Greek words behind that are fascinating to me. The word sin in Greek is amatoia, which comes from archery, and it means to miss the bullseye, to miss the target. So a sinner is somebody who's missed the bullseye, who's missed the target. And the target we're all aiming for is to feel better, to avoid suffering, to be at peace, however you want to put it, but that looking for that greater inner contentment, ease, happiness. That's what we all want, as the Dalai Lama said. We all are looking for that. If we miss it, if we've missed that, then a sinner is someone who's missed that. Repent. But the word repent is metanoia. And metanoia means beyond the mind. Or also it can mean another way of thinking, another way of looking at things. Go beyond your current way of seeing things. So someone who's missed the target, someone who's trying to find peace but isn't finding it, change your thinking, because what you're looking for, the kingdom of heaven, is not out there, it's in here, it's within you. And this to me is part of the eternal wisdom. And I think what is fascinating today is we are rediscovering this ourselves en masse. There's a global spiritual awakening that's happening that's not led by any one spiritual leader. I mean, there's many great spiritual teachers out there, many wise people, and I love listening to them, being with them. There's many, many great teachers, but they're all part of what is happening. It's not any particular school of thought. We are collectively, millions of us, rediscovering that spiritual essence that's behind all the great spiritual teachings. We are rediscovering that, learning from each other. You come here, learn from each other. You read books, watch things on YouTube, whatever it is, talk to people. We are all doing this. We're all learning from each other. And as we do this, a new spirituality is arising on the planet, which doesn't have a leader, but which we are together fine-tuning, we are honing, and gradually we're all coming to see it the same way. And that, to me, is the most fascinating thing that's happening on this planet. And maybe I should just stop on that. So thank you.